everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about, wow, this episode's named Protect the Coven, huh? That's crazy. They don't really do that.
I'm here with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef Hagen.
What's going on?
I'm really, well, they don't do that at all.
No.
That's so crazy that they name it that.
Not one of their skill sets, no.
Yeah. So we're getting into episode 11, Protect the Coven. And hey, were you thinking, damn, they haven't had enough Delphine episodes? And what did happen with Kyle's polyamory? Great news. Apparently so did the writers. Not me, though. You're different than me, and that's fine. I wasn't asking for these things, and thus am rather upset that they felt the need to have a Delphine episode.
Yeah, no.
She wasn't even in the last episode, was she? Like, the last we saw her, she
neither
was just
was
ahead.
Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle yeah. wasn't there either. Like, they just, like, forgot those characters were in the show after giving them, like, a pretty big jump in their plot. Like, the last time we saw Delphine, she had, like, overcome racism and had decided that all of the movies that Queenie made her watch had actually solved her racism. And the last thing we saw of Kyle was that he was
fixed.
And
she had no body.
Yeah, no body.
And she had no body, which is like a pretty big deal. And yeah, Kyle, exactly. Kyle now is just like fine and is apparently hired as the guard dog of the house under Fiona, I guess. That happened,
yeah.
Maybe.
And then last episode, they forgot they had done that. So they just didn't have that either of those characters in the episode. Yeah. Subsequently, after their big changes.
Yeah, it's
time to deal with the corporation as well. Hey, y'all, you remember the corporation and Hank, who's here? Well, we're going to resolve that. You might say resolve that, but it's not set up yet. That's a great point.
Great point, Mega Man.
Great point, Mega Man. Should we get into it?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Like, the most surprising and confusing thing when I started watching this episode was the opening sequence, because it's very clearly a flashback, like, from the jump. You can tell it's a really old flashback. It ends up being 1830. And it's a Delphine flashback that, and I'm not joking, doesn't establish any new information about Delphine. The only thing it establishes is that, like, we get to see the first time she decided to be a real piece of shit and kill one of her slaves. Like, she was already kind of, like, really racist, but then, like, I guess got bored and was like, I'm going to try serial killing now.
Yeah, like, they try to introduce it as, like, yeah, she was sick of her, all the people around her, and she thought her daughters were dumb, and then she was like, well, we gotta kill a chicken if we wanna eat, because there's no, the help isn't around, and poor Kita didn't want to do it, and she did it, and I guess that was just, like, Delphine was like, I'm actually into blood, this is my thing, I'm, like, insanely horny right now, and she, like, touches some chicken blood, and then she's like, okay, well, now I'm gonna serial kill people for funsies, which, it's a jump, I would say, in activity class.
Also, again, cannot overstate the fact that this is a real human being who killed real people in real life.
Holy shit, they got me. They fucking got me. I forgot. This is a real person. You can't say why she was a kill. That's so fucked up.
We've written fan fiction about basically why this lady has decided to become a serial killer. And it's like, it's the only thing that it does is there's a whole ass sequence. It's like 3 minutes long. The only thing that it does is the first time that she kills somebody, like, it's one of her slaves and he gets trapped under a bookshelf while he's moving some books. And she's like, well, time to start serial killing real people now that I've touched blood 3 minutes ago. And she knocks him out with like a rock, I guess, and then ties him up and tortures him to death. And that's all that happens in the opening sequence. We do not learn any more information. We don't learn, like, any, I don't know, any, like, twists, like, oh, maybe the reason that she did it was, like, something that we would have never guessed. No, that's not it. They just wanted to have a Delphine sequence so that we would remember Delphine was in the show, because they forgot, in the last episode. yeah, so that's the opening sequence. Like, literally, it's nothing. It's 3 minutes of nothing. And then it opens on the graveyard where Misty is hidden in a tomb. Don't worry, that's not relevant. Nobody uses their witch powers and is able to discern that she's nearby. And she barely gets mentioned at all in this scene, actually.
In fact,
this scene isn't even about her. It just happens to be... Listen, I know cities like New Orleans. Like, there are plenty of cemeteries, I promise. What a wild coincidence that they're burying Nan at the same cemetery that Madison happened to trap Misty at, and nobody and nobody ended up noticing. That's not the wildest part of the scene, though, because they're doing a funeral for Nan. Fiona is doing a funeral for Nan, I should say. And, like, literally not a single person is like, hey, we know Fiona is, like, actively hunting the girls. Do we maybe think Fiona did this? They're just all like, damn, that's crazy. Nan died. That's so wild.
How?
Yeah, how could this have happened? There's nobody who would want one of us dead.
She just drowned out of nowhere. That's so wild.
Hey, weren't we trying to kill Fiona now that we think about it? Wasn't that a thing?
No.
Is there a spell that puts water in people's lungs? Ah, shit.
And then one of them, I don't even remember which one of them, but one of them that is not Fiona nor Marie is like, yeah, it sucks that Misty's not here, so we couldn't just bring her back. And I'm like, you're full of shit, and I'll prove it in about 0.5 seconds, because Queenie's about to show up.
Everyone back.
Yeah. Queenie's about to show up. Kyle is there, by the way, at the funeral.
Who was brought back by not Misty.
Yeah, who was brought back by not Misty. Then a car pulls up, and Queenie comes out of the car. And she's got Delphine, like, on a leash. Delphine has her body again, by the way, because I figure they couldn't, like, afford lollipop chainsaw special effects where she's just ahead all the time.
Is that really, like, so hard nowadays? You know, like, I'm not a special effects person, but I just feel like, all right, Kathy Bates, wear this green suit, you know? Like, and that kind of covers, like, 60% of it, you know, at least. She probably has one of her own, but whatever.
I don't know. Based on how awful, how absolutely dog shit the blood special effects are in this episode, and I do mean, like, awful. Probably the worst I've ever seen them in this show. I'm going to say they probably couldn't manage it.
Fair.
There are some blood spurts in this that I'm like, I think I've worked with the pump that did that. Like, I'm like, I'm pretty sure you use this to, like, clean out a fish tank. Like, that's the kind of spurts we get. Not like a visceral someone bleeding out. It's just more like, this is the appropriate amount of air to give a fish.
And that's just the practical effects. I'm talking about also, like, the digital effects. There were so many, like, blood splatters that were just like someone googled blood splatter PNG and then just like windmill slammed it on the scene. It doesn't have any rhyme or reason for where the blood is going. It's just a generic like blood splatter effect that's literally just slammed on top of whatever is happening at the time. It is so bad. They couldn't green screen out Delphine's body, I promise. And in case you're wondering if any of the characters are like, hey, Queenie, how did you get Delphine's head back on her body? And if they answer that question, the answer to the first one is yes. People are like, hey, Queenie, how did you get her head back on her body? The answer to the second question is no. Queenie will not answer that question.
She's just like, I figured it out. I can do that now. It's like, oh, okay. And then I think explains, I got like, hey, yeah, I shot myself in the head and it turns out it was a silver bullet, which should have killed me, but I didn't feel like it, which is like, oh, okay. That's a power, I guess.
At some point later in the episode, she says, I got new powers, and then like explains that she shot herself and didn't die. And I'm like, I think that's just your regular power, actually.
Canonically getting more like magic powers outside of the school than they are in the school, you know? Like, the school is awful. Like, it's so bad.
To be fair to Queenie, though, like, we as viewers did kind of already call, like, hey, do we think silver bullets actually do anything to the witches? Like, are we sure that's what? Because they seem like pretty weak to regular bullet. Like, they're not immune to that. So, like,
right?
Was it special that they got shot with a silver bullet? Or
so like, I feel like at this point, if you're the headmaster of the witch school, the only like ethical choice is to like take them all out to a cliffside and just like kick them off and see if any of them figure out how to fly. Like, it seems like just under great duress, they just find new abilities. So this is why I should not run a school for witches, it would seem. Because I would just be maybe, like, hey, learn to fly, idiot. And they're like, hey, are you a resistant to fire? No, that sucks. Okay, you try.
Maybe that was the Salem thing. It's like, drown them and then we know they're really good witches. Like, we just got it backwards, you know? Like,
yeah. Also, I would argue they don't even need to be under duress because Madison just learned necromancy because she felt like it. She's like, no, I know necromancy now.
Well, no, that was a spell and or ritual from a book,
which is different
from just having a spell. No, you might ask, why is that? To which I'd say, I don't know.
That is very true, but that also raises the more confusing second time that she did it, which was when she randomly resurrected that guy in the graveyard.
Oh, yeah, the random guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She did have to do a whole-ass ritual for Kyle, but for this guy, she's just like, no, he's fine. He's good.
Get up, please.
Yeah, he's good. Okay. In fact, he's very polite and waited until I was done with my conversation to get out of the coffin. I just do this now. But yeah, so like they're like, man, it's a shame Misty's not here. Now what are we going to do? The one of the 25 sets of Dragon Balls we have isn't here. We certainly couldn't use the other 24 to resurrect Nan. Sure. And also, Fiona does necromancy. We saw her do it on Queenie. Literally everyone in the scene besides Marie, who kind of can do necromancy because she did raise the zombies. Everyone in this scene can do necromancy, except for Kyle. Literally, and maybe Delphine.
Also, based on this universe, all you have to do to be revived sometimes is have a pretty lady spit in your mouth, to which I'd say, I know a lot of people who should be immortal. If that's all it takes, I know people who would pay for that, let alone with upside.
Man, I got slow the raw end of the
Gmail
deal.
Slow beef at Gmail is my business. I'm sorry.
Right?
So.
Yeah.
When is someone going to spit in my mouth and make me immortal? That's what I want to know.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So Queenie is just like, I'm back now. And everyone's like, oh, shit. And like Queenie like yells at Marie and is like, you left me to die. And she's like, I didn't know that you wouldn't die when you got shot in the head.
I saw you shot in the head with a silver bullet. I kind of made some assumptions. My bad.
And she goes to like hug Queenie. And before she can do that, Delphine spits on Marie. So Delphine's just still fully nasty. Like she, the whole like, oh, I watched a bunch of very moving documentaries, movies, and listened to a bunch of music that changed my racism. Doesn't matter. I'm nasty again. In fact, arguably nastier than I was before. And the rest of this episode will be narrated by me while I give my weird, like, racist monologue this episode.
Yeah, I think there's like confusion because there's a few problems obviously with all of this, but like one of them is also, again, like for the umpteenth time, but it really I think does bear repeating, Delphine Lawlery was a real person who was really shitty in real life. So even if even if just the character was redeemed, she's done such shitty things that this movie, like, hey, I'm not racist anymore, that doesn't really cut it, you know? And especially not because, again, real person. It's just, why are we doing this? But, you know.
Also, they keep...
They keep forgetting it and undoing it, right? Yeah. Like, they keep just being like, yeah, she's racist again. She's not racist again. Like, the wild thing is, they come up with more backstory and flashbacks soon. And I think, as, like, an author or a showrunner, a thing I would want to be really careful of is if I have a character that has, like, a truly transformative moment where, like, they are no longer character A, they are fully character B, you only have a flashback or backstory if it's, like, to provide contrast of how much they are no longer character A and are fully character B. But it doesn't do that. This show's, like, and here's why she's still character A, which doesn't work when the story says she's not supposed to be, right?
No, right. She's fully character A still, which is really confusing. They keep like blue balling us about like whether or not she's gonna get not racist, because like this is like the third redemption arc she's gotten. Not right now, because she doesn't get a redemption arc after this. But like,
right,
this is the end of the third time where like she's done something or something has happened where she's had the chance to like turn a corner. First was when her daughter was a zombie and she like sacrificed herself and her daughters to save the people in the house. The second time was when I'm trying to think of like when her and Queenie kind of bonded.
Yeah.
And they went to like the burger restaurant. And then the last time was when Queenie trapped her in the room and made her watch and listen to all that stuff. And each one of those times, she appeared to be getting better. And some people would argue, oh, well, that's the point. The point is that some people just aren't redeemable. Then stop doing this as a character arc for this character. It's really not working for me.
Yeah, again, you know, and I think it's more palatable again if she were a fictional version of Delphine Lurie, because you could say like then like whatever with a fictional character. It's like when you do that, if you want a redemption arc, or even these aborted redemption arcs, it still like says something about what you're trying to say about the real historical person, which I don't think they intended to do, and it's just a really unhappy accident, you know, like.
That actually, like, you may be closer to the correct answer than, like, we think, which it probably is, like, something to the effect of, like, they really want these, like, really terrible characters to get a redemption arc because that makes for good TV. Not in this show, but, like, it makes for good TV otherwise. But they know the backlash to them giving a redemption arc to, like, one of the most racist evil women in history is going to be real poorly received. So they... Right. Are like, no, don't worry, we didn't redeem her, she's still evil, don't worry, we're not portraying her in a good light, like, but they want their cake and to eat it too, so they're like, but we are gonna have redemption arc so that you will have that same rush of dopamine when the bad character decides to be a good character again. this is regrettably a Delphine episode for the most part. Yeah, so that wraps up the funeral at the cemetery. Not much is established. Somehow none of the witches notice that Misty is trapped there. Who knows? She might be dead. Who could say?
Nothing about Nan, either. Yeah. Like, no one says a single word about Nan, which is pretty fucked at Nan's funeral.
Yeah.
Hey, Nan, yeah, cool funeral or whatever. So, about the witch war.
Yeah. Yeah, time to go back home. Nana's gone now. And, like, nobody even mentions, like, hey, could we maybe bring her back, like, a different way? Or should we maybe, like, keep her around in case Misty comes back to, like, revive her? They're just like, nope, she's dead. There's no coming back from it. Which I guess this is their way of being like, well, we have to somehow, like, sidestep the glaring loophole that she couldn't be revived anyway because her soul is now with Lance Reddick as of the last episode.
Yeah.
Which would make it hard to, I think, revive, I believe. I don't think you can, like, steal the... That would have been a spoiler alert. This doesn't happen. But it would have been a very funny, like, scene to see, like, Misty, like, fighting with Lance Reddick trying to steal Nan's soul back. Like, she's trying to revive Nan, but she can't because the soul is with Papa Legba. So she's like arguing with Papa Legba, like, you gotta give me the soul back. Like, that would have been a very funny interaction, but we don't get that because the show isn't that good. Instead, it's time for Hank's dad to finally be sad about Hank being dead now, back at Delphi or whatever the fuck that organization was called. Hank's dad has, like, the actor who plays Hank's dad, I couldn't be bothered to learn that character's name. He has a specific speech impediment that makes it really hard for me to take him seriously when he's talking specifically about Hank being dead. Like, everything else that he like says, it just sounds like he has like an accent almost. But like specifically in this scene, there's several scenes. Someone else must have directed this like episode, or like the real director must have been sick or something. This episode, the acting is notably worse than most of the other episodes, even from the main cast. And like the editing is fucking wild in some of the scenes.
I feel like they start letting some of the actors direct in some of them. Like, I know Angela Bassett's done a few episodes of American Horror Story as director, mm-hmm. and I feel like maybe Sarah Paulson's done one. So who knows? Maybe this one they gave it to the gaffer. Just like, yeah, what the hell? You know?
I want to say Sarah Paulson actually did quite a few of them in Cult specifically. They definitely, mm-hmm. yeah, they definitely do that. They definitely let the actors direct sometimes. Whoever did this one, bad job. Some of these characters are delivering lines just absolutely incorrectly.
Hank's father in particular here just has like a lot of weird, like, oh, so nothing for my son then. No, we're just going to pretend a different guy did it and then cover it. No, no one will celebrate him. And it's like, this only works if your character didn't literally spend the last every episode and every interaction with Hank going, Hank, you're a fuck up and you're not good at anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, it kind of rings a little hollow when he's like, no one's going to remember my boy. It's like you were begging people to not remember your boy not a full hour ago.
Seriously.
Oh my God. And we'll find out that the apple didn't fall too far from the tree by the end of this episode.
Yep.
Maybe Hank's not actually totally at fault for how he is, TM. It's literally just a scene of where Hank and Hank's like number one right-hand man are like talking about how like they're gonna make it seem like a random veteran with PTSD is the one who did the shooting, not his son. And like, that's well and good. I'm sure lots of very famous people who have very high ranking positions in Fortune 500 companies have done similar things when they're children have done things that are not so savory. However, it was fully on the news. And Hank has made no effort to hide his identity. So it seems like that ship has probably sailed. Not that it matters. Also, there's like a weird dialogue between Hank's dad and Hank and like the number one right-hand man whose name I don't know. Of like, oh, okay, now we got to take care of the witches, which is what we say every time we're on the screen. and he says something like, oh yeah, like all of our investors will have our back. Like they'll loan us money and then afterwards we'll pay them back by killing them or something.
This makes no sense at all, right? Because weren't they like facing bankruptcy in the SEC like a little while ago and no one would touch them or anything? And then... Yeah,
like this conversation doesn't make any, like what he's saying, first of all, is just word salad. It doesn't make any sense. And then secondly, like, what the fuck are you talking about, brother? Like, what the fuck are you going on about? This man's just yapping. Like, he's just saying nothing.
It felt like they wanted to remind the audience, like, these are the guys who were messed with by the witches and had their economy ruined. So, and it's like, but who cares? I don't care about these guys.
Some like part of me is like, because this show used to be on, you know, normal television and wasn't like streamed, like maybe they want some of these repeat plot points so that you, like a viewer, might have missed a few episodes and be like, okay, but these are these guys. But they do it in a way that like contradicts the previous episodes, so it doesn't really help, you know? Like it just doesn't work.
It's like a choose your own adventure if you skip an episode. You just get to make up what you think happened in between. Speaking of making up what happened in between the first and last time we saw them, we get more Delphine backstory. I know we were all just frothing at the mouth, hoping we would get more Delphine backstory. Here's where she starts her weird fucked up monologue, like all voiceover. And it varies in intensity and racism from being like kind of a normal voiceover to, wow, okay, we're just quadrupling down on it, I guess. And she's like cutting Fiona's toenails while Fiona and Marie are like on the phone with the witch hunters.
They just call them.
Yeah.
Secret Society. Hey, Secret Society, we need to meet. okay. All right, great. You know, that was much easier than I thought it'd be. I assume the Illuminati would be hard to get a hold of. But Dan, their number's just in the phone book, I guess.
Yeah, and they just answer, even though they know it's probably us. Like, that's so wild. Like, our number one biggest nemesis. And, like, the... don't worry, it'll be rectified this episode. But, like, it's like, there's not anything they could have done. They don't even try, but there's nothing they could have done to, like, give a reason enough that, like, the witch hunters would be like, yeah, it's a good idea for us to meet with the witches in a, like, neutral area where they, yeah, the people who can do, like, turbo magic could just fucking own us at any given point in time. This is a good idea. I actually love me. The rabbit loves walking into the tiger cage. I think it's great, and I think it's a good idea. Do I have any motivation to do so? Absolutely not. Do I gain anything? Absolutely not. But I'm going to do it anyway.
So the cliche joke is you had one job, but in fact, you built a whole business around witch hunting. Like, you had many people with many jobs that would say, hey, rule number four, maybe it's up there, top 10. Don't do this, you know? Like, do you have any talisman? No, just, you know, we're just going to go in there. We'll see what they have to say.
Yeah, we'll wing it. We have paperwork that they can sign. That'll go over well. The
shareholders will love such a bold move. Sorry, go ahead.
That's really got to be a big hole in this, though, is like when the Belmont family goes to, like, kick Dracula's ass. You're like, well, yeah, they have, like, a holy whip and, like, some holy water, maybe, like, an axe or two. Like, yeah, they have ways. They have means. They're prepared for this job. What are the... What is their plan to fight the witches? Because I really can't see... Like, I guess shoot them is the main one.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
Outside of that, when some of them have, like, force push and, like, pyromancy and shit, like, I want a little bit deeper of a well of game plans than shoot them, hope it works out.
Like, don't they have, like, maybe an evil witch they could, like, kind of ask questions of? Or, you know what I mean? Or, like, somebody, like, you know...
This is the problem with hardline extremist stance, Beef. They can engage with a nasty witch, even though it would be very beneficial for them.
But, like, what's ridiculous is then, too, is, like, Hank's like, hey, Marie, like, no, Marie LaVeau's like, Hank, can you help me? Like, no, he cannot. Like, what are you talking about? Like, why would you even think that?
Hank gets no useful information from A, Marie, or B, being married to Delia for roughly 5 years. Like, does not provide any relevant information to Delphi.
Whoa. He killed one lady.
Oh, true.
That was it. That's all he got. One lady whose power just ended up being Madison's anyway.
Also, I would argue that he did better than, from what we'll see by the end of this episode, he did better than the rest of Delphi. And I'm not really sure how Delphi is an organization at this point.
Yeah. You know what? I'll say it. I'm not learned in any form of defensive technique or military operation or anything like that. I think I'd outperform them. I think I'd outperform them through the magic of leaving the room.
Yeah, or just simply not being there to begin with. Having common sense and simply not being present to begin
or
with.
Or just realizing things were going bad and being like, I'm out of here. This is stupid.
Yeah, because, like, again, cannot overstate, like, yes, these are, like, businessmen for, like, the front of their corporation, but, like, at their heart, they are the Belmont family. So... you'd think that they would have something in the arsenal of, like, yeah, send, like, our best guys that aren't Hank to, like, just snipe them. Just snipe the witches. Just, like, go snipe the witches. Send somebody who's not Hank and is actually competent at their job to go snipe the witches. Why are
Do
we
witches
doing
know
a-
how to deal with drones? Do they know what a drone is?
Like-
Don't they have, like, a corporate wiki? You know, something that you can just look up? Like, yeah. How to deal with witches. Step one, don't be there without a gun, you know?
Step two, drones. Get them out of there.
Sniper rifles. Make sure they're not paying attention. Like, clearly...
Can't curse a Roomba. That's all I'm saying. You can't curse a Roomba. Yeah.
So true. Like, the thing is, like, we clown on, because he's very funny, we clown on Hank for being absolutely dog shit, absolutely just ass water assassin. The other guys are not any better.
He's like their best agent, though. Actually, right? He's killed one. It's, I mean, it's better than we've seen anyone else in the father killed one, you know?
So oh, that's true. We did see him, like, kill a lady who was in the woods, question mark? Like, clearly they do some, like, reconnaissance and, like, go to where they know a witch. I just don't understand what they want us, the audience, to think that the Delphi organization gains from agreeing to this meeting. Like, I guess that it could be argued that Fiona mind controlled him, but then at that point it's like, well, then why didn't she just mind control him to kill himself?
So, like, the idea is supposed to be that he's, like, so desperate from this economic stress that he's, like, willing to, you know, do something to get the corporation back in order so they can start doing it again. But it doesn't really hit for me, at least. I'm not sure about the whole audience, but for me, at the very least, when they just don't really have a very clear defined purpose, right? Like, again, talking about the Belmont family, the thing is, if I ran into any member of the Belmont family in the street, you know what they would say? Get out of my way. I have to go kill Dracula. And that's all. That's all they would think about. They have nothing else in their mind. The Delphi Corporation, I don't know if they do hunt witches. Right? I'm still kind of unclear. So it doesn't really, like, sound, feel like this big, like, giving up of moral aspiration when you're just like, yeah, we're like a capitalist company mostly. And, like, yeah, occasionally my son shoots a lady.
just one lady. And it's not even the lady we sent him after. It's a different lady.
Not really
he met
a great sell on the witch hunting aspect of the company.
Yeah.
We're much better at, like, numbers and business and commerce and stocks or whatever, whatever it is that we do that makes all this money, because it's not fucking witch hunting, obviously.
Not that good either, I gotta say, but yeah.
Yeah, he does say something like to the effect of, like, the involvement of the government. He's like, we gotta get the government off of our backs or something.
The liberals, like, in Washington, yeah.
Yeah, which I'm like, this guy's gotta deal with the government too. Like, he's got the government coming down on him and he has to deal with witches? Damn.
Wouldn't the government be, like, pro witch killing, I would think? You know, like, at least certainly. In, like, the usual. You know.
If they were aware of the ability that witches clearly have to just crash an economy, no, the American government wouldn't talk about it. They would just do it. Yeah. There wouldn't be witches. The American government would just be like, oh, how many bullets to solve this problem? Great, what a deal.
Let me know if we need drones.
We've got some. They're uncursable.
It's almost as though we have many, many forms of media in which the crux of the media is mutants, maybe even X-Men per se, are hunted down by the government because they pose a threat to the government's ability to control a population. Also The Boys, and probably dozens of other media about wanting to destroy characters or people, rather, that have abilities that the government cannot police.
Harrison Bergeron, legally, I think.
And, like, these media, too, are very, very available to the people writing a show about things like this. But for some reason, it's just sort of like, you know, what if it's a corporation? Oh, what do they do? Oh, you know, it's just a kill witches, you know, maybe.
Why would it be secret? You know what I mean? Like, Why do the witch hunters have to hide? Why would the witch hunters not want the other people to know they're witch hunters? Like, I understand why the witches don't want people to know why they're witches, right? Because obviously it would put them in a compromising position. It's like the superhero conundrum. Like, you don't want people to know that you can do that. The witch hunters don't have anything to lose, aside from that the witches will know who they are. But at that point, the witches were able to just Google them. So, like, that doesn't seem to be that big of an issue to begin with. They're just going to know. So you'd think that, like, they would want as many eyes on the witches. They'd be doing, like, propaganda and, like, campaigning, like, we gotta get rid of these witches. These witches are bad for business. They're gonna crash your economy. They're gonna hurt your capitalism.
Are are the witches bad for business, though? Like we haven't really established even what the Delphi Corporation, like, sells or does.
Can anyone ask the witches if they can be good for business? Because clearly they can be bad for business. We've established this. But they could also probably do, like, upside. They could be, like, spell to make America extra rich. And it would be like, hell yeah, brother. Get on board.
There is someone. There's a consultant that the Delphi Corporation has hired, which has probably made a whole PowerPoint on this. And they were just like, get this guy out of here. You know, like, thanks, Hank. Or thanks, Frank. Good one, but...
old comic of a guy being thrown out the window for making the very obvious correct suggestion.
Frank, and it's just Hank with a mustache on.
If we focused on either witch hunting or being a corporation, we could probably be doing both okay. You know, either one okay.
Hank being fake dead and back as Frank with a mustache and trying to convince the rest of the corporation, like, no, we can just have sex with the witches. It's cool.
They're nice. They smell good. They're, like, really nice to me.
Yeah. This one, sometimes they like plants.
You ever have the ecstasy? It's the best. Like, holy crap. You know?
Yeah, he's like, I think the witches might be good, actually. Like, that's my favorite thing about Hank as a character, is the moment that the Delphi Corporation and his father put any modicum of pressure on him about how he's beefed it, like, with his, like, weird insider, like, information. Yeah, he's like, oh, my hot wife, my hot witch wife, I love my hot witch wife, oh god. Like, he immediately crumbles and is like, oh god, I'm such a wife guy, I love my wife so much.
God, just like me, for real, what a fella. Just cannot.
Arthur, like,
it's so funny, too, just like, your target. Oh, you mean my wife? I mean, my target.
Yeah, I love my target. I mean, I hate my wife. I mean.
I hate my wife. Ah, shit.
I wish Hank was still in the show. The show was so much better when Hank was in the show. I miss Hank. I miss Hank as much as Hank's dad misses Hank. But that's neither here nor there, because now they have arranged a meeting, and Delphine is cutting Fiona's toenails. I don't even fucking remember. The voiceover is something, she's like, when I was a kid, something, I was like raised by a nice lady, but I'm not nice. Or whatever. Something we don't give a shit about.
I was born into not a lot of money. And then I married into a lot of money. And then I had a lot of money. And now I don't have a lot of money. And I fucking hate that shit. Like, that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's all, like, over a sequence of, like, different times Delphine is having to wait on people. But, like... Again, this isn't new information. There's only 3 episodes left in the season. We already know she's being forced to be a housekeeper. Like, this is not new. We already know she hates it. We don't need to be reminded how much she hates it. We already know. But, like, we get this, like, weird sequence of her giving voiceover and, like, her watching all of the different people in the house. She, like, is weirdly watching Kyle, Zoe, and Madison all sleeping in a twin-sized bed together, which I have a lot of commentary about that.
Well, as somebody who's, like, who overheats a little bit during sleeping, nightmare. I can't be in a 3-person pile that tight. Are you crazy? I'm going to die. I'm going to boil alive in there.
Yeah, like, when they agreed to be polyamorous, like, they didn't agree to be, like, stuck in a twin-sized bed. Like,
you should get a queen at least.
Yeah.
Push 2 twins together.
Yeah, push 2 twins together in the most dire of scenarios. Like, or just take turns. Like, don't everybody try to sleep on one bed. What the fuck are you doing? Why are you like this? Why did you even attempt to be like this? That's one of the scenes. And then, like, also Delphine.
Zoe sleeping in front of the door, cradling a chainsaw like a samurai with their katana.
Another scene is Delphine seeing Fiona going out without underwear on. She's like, oh yeah, Fiona's going out without underwear on. I'm like, in this scene, she's literally putting on pantyhose. That still counts. Like, just because it's not, like, the traditional underwear does not mean it's not underwear. Either way, that doesn't matter. Also weird. 2 things very strange. One, that the Axeman does not just live in the house. He is a ghost who can make himself apparate at will. So there's no downside to him just staying at the house with Fiona. In fact, it might be safer for Fiona. in most ways. But instead, he still keeps and, I guess, pays rent on an apartment somewhere else in the city. And she has to go see him. She has to go leave to get dick appointments from her weird ghost boyfriend. And Delphine slut shames her for that. And I'm like, she's like 75 years old. Like, she's allowed to, I think.
Yeah.
I think she's allowed to do that. That's not like
that's,
bad.
That's well past the smoke 'em if you got 'em line for sure.
Yeah, like, she's not like a 15-year-old sneaking out to like meet a boyfriend. Like, she's like 75. Like, it's fine.
Right, yeah.
Delphine thinks it's like
she's,
weird.
She's made her choices about how she's living her life. There's wisdom behind her decisions. Is she using all of it? Who can say? But it's there. That's what matters.
And she's enjoying herself. Again, I don't know why the Axeman doesn't live here. Like, there's not even a plot reason why he can't just live there. But like, he doesn't.
He's worried he'd get on her nerves, probably, which is like fair. I imagine Fiona's pretty easy to get on her nerves.
Yeah, it's just, it's very odd that I would like to remind everybody, he's been in the house for like 100 years. Was there when she was 8 years old, and grew up with her, essentially.
See, that part sucks. You don't gotta bring that part. Yeah, that sucks like a lot.
That part's terrible.
What I'm saying is, it's weirder that he doesn't live in the house now when he lived in the house with her for like 60 years. I'm saying it's weird that he doesn't live there now.
Yeah, for sure. The thing that's like extra weird too is like they almost make the Axeman as like a fun boyfriend kind of work by the end of this, except then I'm being forced to remember he like perved on her when she was a kid, and that sucks. That ruins the whole ball game. You can't really come back from that.
Yeah, nope. It's there is no reason for anything that happens with the Axeman, but like during this sequence of events where Delphine is like talking about her backstory we don't give a shit about, at one point she like walks into a bathroom where Madison's doing her makeup and she's like folding towels and she's like, "Hey, you didn't flush your shit down the toilet." And Madison's like, "You flush my shit down the toilet." And I'm like, it is wild what we're building up to, and also wild that we had to have a scene where Madison didn't fucking flush the toilet for this to happen. Because
right?
Why? Like, the only reason why this happens is so the next scene can happen, and it is wild that they had to set this up.
And it's, and like, it's wild too that it's like, Madison, like, I guess it's because Madison is the only character that would like believably be like, "Fuck you, you flush it down," as opposed, like, I guess Marie Laveau also could have been, because, you know, Marie Laveau at least, does Madison need to poop? It's like,
yeah,
kind of the question I'm getting at. Like, she's like dead, right? Like, she talked about how her insides are rotten and don't work or whatever.
Yeah, and she doesn't need to eat because food like doesn't do anything, so she just doesn't eat anymore.
They could have picked any other character. Everyone else in this show can poop. They've picked the one character that logistically does not work for having left a mud pie. It's unbelievable.
It really is. It really
they
is.
They had so many right answers, and they were like, "No, I'm finding the one that doesn't make sense."
Also, it's such a thing that no one, not even a fictionalized version of a serial killer, would do, to be like, "Hey, you didn't flush the toilet." Like, no, you just flush it. Like, you don't need to like bring attention to it. You're not their mom. You're not their mother figure. Like, you either ignore it or you just flush it. You don't like have a conversation about it. It's a very awkward scene. It's such a weird scene. And I bet a lot of you are thinking, "Hey, why are they doing that? Why is that scene relevant? Like, what possibly could they be preparing us for, that we would need to know that Madison took a shit and didn't flush it?" It's because they straight up write an alternate universe of the movie The Help, where Delphine, everyone's favorite racist lady, scoops the poop out of the toilet and makes it into a soup for everybody. You know, that movie with that won a bunch of like Oscars, with that incredibly famous scene where the racist lady gets fed poop by one of the women who works for her because she's a racist piece of shit. What if in our property, the racist lady fed poop to the non-racist people in the house.
Is that good? Do we like this? I'm turning the knob on it up and down. How's the audience responding? Are you getting a thumbs up for this? Thumbs down. Oh, okay. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
No, you don't get it. It's horror, so it's a twisted version of the scene we're just stealing.
Oh my. Oh, it's like another horror property, but fucked up and evil. Cool.
And The Help isn't even a horror property for what it's worth. Like, what's also so wild is like that scene is like a climactic scene and it's a big payoff for the audience because we all as the audience fucking hate the racist lady. She's a huge piece of shit to the main character. So we're all like, hell yeah, you made that racist lady eat shit. That's so funny. Hell yeah. Like everybody stands and claps because that's a good scene. What am I supposed to do with this scene? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Am I supposed to cry? Like, in a bad way? Am I supposed to be made to feel so uncomfortable? Like, oh no, the good characters ate poop. Like, what am I supposed to feel? There isn't, like, an antithetical version of the original version of that scene. So I'm not sure. I really just think it's, like, they watched The Help, saw that scene, and was like, that's sick. Like, in a good way. Sick, parentheses, positive. We have to put that in our show. How can we make somebody feed somebody else poop in this show? And this is how they choose to do it. You may be wondering, does that accomplish literally anything? No.
I can tell you factually, as somebody who didn't realize that there was a part where she fed them poop until I was reading the notes from you two afterwards, because like I must have zoned out for like the 10 seconds when she scooped the poop into the soup. So it was just like, Madison got mad at her, and I looked back, and they were being served soup, and I just didn't even clock it. I was like, oh, that soup looks a little gross. Is that anything?
Also, like, yeah.
It just doesn't affect anything. There's literally nothing changed by the knowledge being gained later of there was poop in that soup. It changes nothing. I can confirm this.
It's literally just like, aha, like, Delphine got one on them, and she got one on that, Myrtle, you know? Like, mm-hmm. You know, because Myrtle has, like, a whole thing, like, you know, coconut and cardamom. It's mulligatawny soup. It's delightful, Delphine. Like, you don't even know you ate shit. But it's also, like, why are we, like ragging on, like, Myrtle? Like, Myrtle's not even, like, that whatever with Delphine. You know what I mean? She's not even, like, that, like, shitty to her, even though she has every right to be. You know, but
in fact, I would say Myrtle is like one of the few people who is often quite pleasant to Delphine, partially as demonstrated by her complimenting the soup.
Yeah. Well, I will say, if you haven't seen the movie The Help, they are just straight up like ripping it one for one. Like that is what happens in the movie. God. Is the lady is eating it and she's like, vanilla, cinnamon, and something I can't quite put my finger on as she's eating the pie and is like very into eating the pie. Like they're literally just ripping it one for one. They're ripping the same format one for one. See. That's why they do it.
Mm.
It's just very stupid and fucking bad in every way possible.
It's really confusing if you haven't seen the movie too, because for me it really was just like kind of a confusing out of nowhere sequence that didn't make a lot of sense like thematically.
Yeah, but like, you know what's funny is the context doesn't seem to help me, like, you know, because I didn't see The Help, so I didn't know that until Liz, you mentioned it. Mm-hmm. And here and before then, obviously, you know, and I'm still thinking about it. I'm like, but why did we do that? Like, why did we steal that scene? Like, what parallel are we drawing?
Why did Zoe get a chainsaw and cut up a bunch of random zombies Marie Laveau sent? That's a great question, Slow Beef, and I don't know if we'll ever get an answer. Because I think the answer is, unfortunately, because they felt like it when they were filming. They just were like, let's do this. Yeah, okay, we have 5 minutes to film.
American Horror Story does this very interesting thing that I don't see many other shows, if any, doing ever, which is like, you know when a show or a property or a movie gets a reboot or a revitalization? For example, let's say Star Wars, when like the newest Star, or not like the most recent one, but like when the new Star Wars with Rey in it first came out, that movie had a lot of moments that were clearly like not nostalgia bait per se, but were like, hey, remember this? We're including this in here because people who watch the original movie are going to be very excited about it. There's going to be references and stuff. It's going to make people be like, yeah, I remember that ship. I remember that place. They do that in American Horror Story all the time, but with other people's properties, other people's shows and movies.
they're usually horror movies. Like, The Help is just drama. It's like a theatric, you know? Like, it's not like that.
I just assumed it was horror because of it being included here. That's extra crazy that it isn't.
No, it's right? just a drama. Like, not even, like, a particularly dark or heavy one. It's just a drama. Yeah, no, it's a great movie. I recommend watching it. But, like, it is not even...
you know,
tangentially close to being horror.
It's so weird. It's just so I can't get over that they made Delphine the hero in that part. But anyway,
yeah.
Sorry.
But in other news, they ate the soup, and Marie decided to keep the baby she stole? Question mark.
Well, like, what the fuck do you want her to do? Bring it back?
Like, return it? Yeah. Just, what the fuck do you think?
Just drop it off in the thing and be like, yeah, this was I don't know, one of them. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't need this one in particular. Also, like, why? Like, was Nan enough for her deal?
I guess apparently that's what the implication is that Papa Legba was like, fine, and just left, which really funny for a deity to just be like, yeah, close enough. Like, I'm into it. Honestly, becoming a big Papa Legba fan, shows up for the Coke, just kind of just like, yeah, whatever, you're cool, the rules are whatever.
Yeah, like, no one really ever asked before. Like, I probably would have let you just like give me hell. I would have let you give me like a mouse or something. That's an innocent soul. I don't give a shit. You just never ask. So you gave me a baby every year.
Which was like weird, but it was cool. I have a bunch of babies now.
Yeah, I have 300 babies because you've been doing this for 300 years. You think Papa Legba is just like tired? He's like, fuck, I have got to stop getting babies from this lady. There are way too many babies in the underworld.
He's got like 16 babies. Like, I forgot what I was doing with these babies. Shit.
Yeah, why did I want these?
It seemed anymore. Like I would want them forever, but like now it's just like, God, I'm so done with
this. Oh my God.
I never should have gotten a tattoo that says unlimited baby works.
No.
I hate this shit.
You know what it is? This is them doing the same weird thing they did in season one where they're like, yeah, you know what people really want? A baby that's a baby forever. Everybody wants this. That's a thing that everybody wants.
Oh my
remember,
God.
Remember the two gay ghosts in season one who were like, yeah, we're going to kill these babies so they're babies forever. That's going to be so fucking cool, even though it's the worst.
Oh my God, that's kind of a plot point in Boss Baby. I wonder if they stole that. But anyway,
sorry. Oh, hell yeah.
I thought you were going into angry dad voice mode just because the idea of having a baby forever is hell on earth. But no, it was because they stole from Boss Baby.
That would go so hard.
Do they really, like, do they come up with, like, a technology to make the Boss Baby a baby forever? Because they're like, well, we don't need a boss man. There's unlimited of those already.
Baby Corp, which makes more sense than Delphi, wants to steal love from other things, and one of their competitors is are puppies, and Puppy Co. is making a puppy that will never age or live forever that the baby is trying to get, like, more info on. I'm sorry for this derail, everyone, but it...
No, I love this. This is like the light of my day. It is in the middle of American Horror Story, just a little Boss Baby lore drop from your boy B. I'm about it.
And it's relevant, because that is kind of what they're trying to imply here, is that people want babies that will be babies. Because, I mean, like, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if a cat or a dog is a baby forever, yeah, that's probably fine. Like, they're mostly behaviorally the same for... pretty much their whole lives, aside from maybe like potty training them.
Yeah.
And they're cute when they're tiny. And babies are cute when they're tiny too. But also babies are, from what I understand, a fucking nightmare to be around most of the time.
Yeah.
which kind of outweighs the other part. The cool part about having kids is that one day they'll grow up and you can just hang out with them and then they're people, which is wild. That doesn't happen with dogs and cats.
Yeah. And the idea of like a baby forever, because like the ideal interaction is somebody who like doesn't particularly want to have kids. My ideal interaction with a baby is like, let me look at it, like hold it and be like, oh, this is great for like 20 minutes. And then as soon as it's like a little bit fiddly and starting to cry a little, I'm like, ooh, get it out of here.
Yeah. Once there's work you have to do with the baby, like, this is not so great anymore. You
it's
know?
Like a fucking job or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm done.
Yep.
Yeah. I've heard from my parents specifically in regards to my nieces and nephews that Yeah, that's what kicks ass about being a grandparent, is you get to hang out with the baby, and then when you're sick of it, you can just give it back to its parents and be like, here you go, now you deal with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But
also, even my parents in particular, like, they will distinguish, like, yeah, your sister, huge pain in the ass, constant problem as a baby. You were hungry. If you weren't hungry, you were fine. Or you were hungry, and that's it. So, like, it even seems like it varies between kid to kid how much of a problem they can be.
The worst babies are the ones that are really easy, because they're always someone else's kid, and you just want to kill that other parent, you know? It's like,
I'm glad to know I was a menace. Yeah, just by, like, being chill.
Slept since day one. Yeah, go fuck yourself. How's that sound? You know?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Papa Legba with his 300 babies. And he's like, man, at first this sounded like it was going to be great.
I
now
only needed
sucks.
One for the coupon at Applebee's. Yeah.
Yeah. Kids eat free on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I just needed that so I could get in there. But here we are. And now I have 300 babies and Nan.
Will you take this teenage girl instead? Yeah, you know what? Yeah. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here.
So, to get back on the rails a little.
Sorry.
Marie. Yeah. Oh, no. It's fine. It was great. We were going to split this in two anyway. And this was a Boss Baby interlude's a great way to justify it. So, Marie has a baby, and she's like, hey, Delphine, you deal with this baby, which is like, okay, so I guess you hate the baby is like the implication here, because, like, you know how Delphine feels about black people just in general. So that's, like, really bad to do, I think. Then Delia is, as you put it, making a magic smoothie to get the sight back. She's just, like, throwing random, like, powders and plants into a thing, mashing it up, and then in what is, she doesn't do it yet, does she? Where she, like, does
no,
the
no, that's the that comes move. Later. The magic smoothie is literally her over a blender, blending up what looks like a green juice and chanting Latin at the blender as she blends up the green juice.
Oh, right. She's, like, whispering. She's just, like, leaning at it and being like, smoothie talk.
Yeah. And I don't remember what character it is, but a character comes up to her and is like, hey, Delia, what the fuck are you doing? And she's like, I gotta get the sight back. And they're like, oh, okay, bye. All right.
Like, I had it once. I'm pretty sure I can have it again, which does, in fact, undermine any chance they had of Delia's being clever and just pretending she lost the sight. Nope, she just did. It sucks. It's the worst possible outcome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she lost it for now. Now, it's time to set up, I don't know, the conflict of this episode. There's a landscaper we've never seen before, ever, in this entire show, and we're on episode, like, what, 11? Named James, and he's a black man, because of course he is, and he comes in and he has hurt himself, because of course he is, and they let Delphine just take him away,
take
him away.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're gonna, we should get some help for this guy or whatever, and Delphine's like, no, let me have it, this one's for me.
I got this, yeah.
And they're like, okay, yeah, that's not weird at all. That's not weird. You don't have a history of this. So, like, sure, I'll leave the ravenous wild dog around my pile of steak. What could go wrong?
Yeah. Like, and to leave you all with a little bit of intrigue, because this is about where we're going to call it. They want us to think that somehow this fully capable man, who just happens to also be a landscaper, would be beholden to any kind of authority that Delphine would enforce over him, and that Delphine would somehow get the upper hand over him in some way.
Yeah, like, he's like, cut his leg, which is, like, bad, but as somebody who's had, like, a deep wound, like, that wouldn't keep me from, like, fighting off an attacker. Like, I would still try, and it would be an Delphine's an old lady. It's Kathy Bates. She's, like, really small.
Also, like, modern, you know what I mean? Like, modern times, too, right? Because it's kind of like, hey, you have a deep cut there. Why don't you come up to the attic or something to get it fixed? Like, no. Like, maybe a bathroom,
you know what?
But, like,
That's also a good, that's a good point. If I was like, hey, I have a really fucking deep wound, and someone's like, oh, we'll get some bandages, I'll be like, fuck you, get a phone, dial 911. Fuck you talking about bandages.
Yeah. Also, I think we're a little overselling how injured he is. He's not that injured. He's just like, hey, do you have some towels? Like, he's not like bleeding out. Like, he just has like, he like cut himself.
It's like a fairly deep cut, but not like immediate tragedy, like going to die and bleed out in the next 20 minutes or anything.
Yeah, like probably doesn't, if you called 911, the EMTs would probably like show up and then like patch it up and then leave. Mm-hmm. You probably wouldn't even go to the hospital.
But like needs sutures, to be clear. Is enough that it would need like some form of suturing. Like it would need some kind of post care, but not enough to be like, immediately threat of death, like weak. Etc.
He's like a grown man, right? So like even no matter what, like he should kind of know this isn't the right answer. Like no matter,
I was just thinking purely on the physicality, but no, you're right. Like the decision making and logistics chain would also be like, no, weird little old lady, I'm not going in the attic with you.
Yeah, and I'm not going to fix your fig trees from now on or whatever I was doing. I'm not sure, you know, but.
Yeah, because what's going to happen is she's going to get the upper hand on him and tie him up in Spalding's old doll room. And that's where we'll leave it for like, what happens next, like what will happen to him, but like they want this to be a parallel with what happened at the beginning of the episode, which is where one of her slaves got trapped and pinned under a bookshelf, and then under the guise of helping him, she knocked him out.
Was crushed.
Yeah, he physically couldn't, he was crying out for help because he could not get out from under the bookshelf that was crushing him. And in under the guise of offering a helping hand, she knocks him out with a rock or whatever, and then strings him up and tortures him. This guy got a little ouchy while trimming a fig tree, and is otherwise a capable grown man who is much bigger than her. So how we got from point A to point B, I don't know. She was really good at convincing, I guess. She just talked him into it, talked him into being tied up, I suppose, because there's no other answer. I mean, granted, she is immortal, but like there's no sign of a scuffle or anything. So I don't know. You're going to have to wait till next week to see what happens to James.
I will say, as a hook for next week, they do one of the funniest things I've ever seen a show about magic do. And it's absolutely kick ass. Just if you've ever wanted to see somebody get lied to in the most spectacularly funny way possible, oh my god, they decided Spalding gets to do a kick-ass joke. I can't wait to share it with you, everyone, because Jesus Christ, like, for some reason, Spalding has been the biggest roller coaster on the planet of, like, he's a weird guy to, like, okay, it's kind of like maybe Sex Pest to, like, yeah, I don't think this is a weird guy who got killed to, like, he's a collector and the funniest ghost in the entire series.
Real Spalding enthusiasts in this chat now.
Oh my god, it's like all over, but holy shit, if we get more of this, oh boy. Yeah, more Spalding, please. So till next time, everybody, good one.
Bye.
Later.